Thanks for listening to The Rivers Podcast. For more information on this teaching, visit our website at theriver.info.
Merry Christmas. It is Christmas week, yeah? I'm glad one of you are excited about that. It's good, Richie. It's good. It's also week 7 in our His Story series, where we land the plane in the series. 6 weeks so far, we've been talking about how God's story, that's His story, intersects with our story. And it's actually a great Christmas series, because isn't Christmas about His story intersecting with our story? And so today, it's our last, as I said, and today is Redemption Sunday. Turn to your neighbor and say, it's Redemption Sunday. And as I've been saying every week, if you have not seen the videos for the prior Sundays that have been done, you're missing out, you're making a mistake, your life is less than, you need to correct this. Go to the website and look at these videos that tell His story through many of y'all's stories. So they're really awesome. Redemption Sunday is today. Redemption, by definition, is the act of taking something which was broken and making it right. Redemption, taking something stuck in sin and making it pure. Redemption, it's good for us to end His story with Redemption Sunday, with Christmas just around the corner, because Christmas is really a story of your and my redemption. It's all about redemption. So to get at the story, we're going to go to the Bible real quick, and I think we have the verse on the screen. It's Joel chapter 2, one of my favorite texts in all of the Scripture. What's going on as this text is unfolding is the nation of Israel finds themselves in a place of brokenness. Now, I need to make sure that y'all are with me. Can anybody relate to being in a place of brokenness? Anybody? Of course you can. How about the rest? Come on, you got to wake up a little bit, church. Of course, sometimes life brings brokenness. Specifically for the Israelites, right before this verse is unveiled, they're living in a land of oppression where their enemy is bigger and badder and stronger than them, and there ain't nothing they can do about it. In addition to that, as life sometimes happens, it gets worse than just being oppressed by a bigger, stronger army. They are living in a land of plagues where the locusts are literally eating all of their crops. This is a bad thing. And to these people who are living in a land of lack and a land of need, in a land of man, life just really stinks. God brings these promises to them. He says, I will repay you for the years the locusts have eaten. I will repay you for the years the locusts have eaten. Now, right there, if you've ever found yourself in a similar place where life is less than you think it should be, this promise from the Lord ought to bring a little peace to your heart, maybe a little smile to your face, maybe a little hope to your soul, because what was true then is true now. God promises those of us who are in the midst of our own plague, our own famine, our own oppression, that He will restore those bad years. Those bad years won't always be the way they're going to be. There's going to be something good a-coming, and that is exactly why Jesus came to planet Earth in the form of a baby so many years ago, is so that He could restore those awful years that have been taken from us and bring back good years for us. Is this good news to anybody in the house? Now, you might be saying, well, I don't know if God can handle my type of junk. Well, the next part of the verse covers all of that. It doesn't matter if it's the great locust or the young locust. Sorry, back it up just a little bit. My bad. The great locust might be there. The young locust might be there. It might be the other locust, or it might be the locust swarm. It doesn't matter what form your locusts take. It doesn't matter what form the plague in your life is, whether it's the great one, the other one, the young one, the swarm of them. It don't matter, because God's redemption can cover it all. So repeat after me. It ain't always going to be this way, friends. And some of you can attest to the fact that God has already brought redemption in your life. You've had the locust in your life, but now you're living out the promise of this. Is that true for anybody in the house? Because you're not always living in a land of plague, right? Sometimes you're on the other side. So for those who are still living and waiting for this verse to come true, those of you who found it to come true, would you just like clap a little bit to encourage somebody? All right, that's good. All right, so that's the Bible for now. Redemption. Now, in order for a redemption story to get to the place of redemption, you have to realize that there has to be a place of crappiness. And so I'm going to tell a story of some crappiness, some junk. And I'm going to tell you right up front, it might make you uncomfortable. You might be a little shocked at what you learned. And I'm telling you, everything that I am going to share is shared with permission from all parties involved. Redemption. Let me take you back to the staff Christmas party 2015, almost a year ago to date. We are gathering at Dory's house. So the church has several folks on staff, four of whom are full-time pastors. The four full-time pastors take a key role in our day's story. I am one of them. The other bald man playing the keyboard today, Brian Fraza, he is our pastor of worship and operations. He's part of the story here. Dory, the host of this aforementioned party, she's one of our pastors, our community pastor. And Rod, who I think is right there next to his lovely wife, is also one of our pastors, their pastoral discipleship. These four characters are the pivotal folks in this story of redemption. Are you ready to go through this story? It all began for me in realization last Christmas 2015 at Dory's house. The party had been going on for a little bit, and I came in late because two of my sons were playing basketball for Loy Norris High School, and so I came in a little late. And I'm wondering if any of you have ever felt the way I felt that moment when I walked into that party. Have you ever felt like when you walked into a room, like there's just something awkward in the air? And have you ever felt like, I just don't belong here? Has anyone ever felt that way? Now you got to help me out because this is an awkward part of my story. These are the people I've worked with for years, and here I am at a staff party thinking, I feel like I'm an intruder. Has anyone ever felt this way? And I wonder, you know, we're spiritual people. We have the body, and then we have the spirit. And I wonder if in those awkward moments, if spirits are communicating in a way that the body doesn't know. And so there I am at our staff Christmas party at Dory's house, feeling incredibly awkward as if I don't belong. Now let me take you further back into our story to about three or four summers ago when it was evaluation time for the lead pastor, that was me at the time, of the River. Now the way the evals worked at the time is the elders of the church, the elders are, it's a biblical term, it's not elderly people, it's just elders. I don't know why they call them that, but they're not old people. They're people who walk closely with the Lord and who volunteer their time to kind of help direct and steer the church. And part of the elder's job is to bring accountability and correction and affirmation to the senior pastor. So it was my evaluation time a few summers ago, and they said this to me. There were two of them who were bringing my eval to me. We went to Panera Bread. They bought me dinner, and they said, hey, we only have 2 hours. There's a lot of good in your eval. We're going to trust that you can read that on your own, but because we only have 2 hours, we're going to have to focus on the negative. Oh, crap. 2 hours of negative? And they ran out of time. But it was good. Because what these two loving people who loved this church enough to bring correction to me, they loved me enough to bring correction. Sometimes it's difficult to bring correction to places where it's needed, right? There were blind spots in my life and in my leadership that were bringing damage to the church. And it came out, this revelation for me that they brought to me. It was the same time that good old Miley Cyrus. Any Miley Cyrus fans in the house? Does anybody have Miley Cyrus on their iPod right now or on their phone? Way to go. Everybody else's fear of being judged. I won't judge you. She came out with this song, came in like a wrecking ball. Do you remember this song? And the gist of that eval that took 2 hours for them to lay out the negative is that I was coming into situations like a wrecking ball, just harsh and overly strong and intimidating and scaring the rest of the staff. Whenever there was a discussion to be had, and whenever there was a disagreement, somebody always won. Guess who that person was who always won? That's not good. It was always me. Whenever there was a disagreement, I thought we were on the same playing field, but like an idiot, I failed to consider that as the boss, they viewed me as the one who could fire them at will, which I never would have, but in their mind, they thought I would have. So I'm coming at it from a top-down perspective, and I think I'm just having a friendly disagreement, and they're scared to death that they're going to lose their job any minute because I'm coming in awfully harsh. And so these two elders took 2 hours at Panera Bread on Gull Road to tell me that I was like Miley Cyrus, coming in like a wrecking ball and doing damage. Well, it wasn't an overly pleasant meeting, but we got through it, and the truth was there. And from that moment on, I began to work really hard at removing the harshness from my life. I began to realize that sometimes when I get serious and think, I kind of do this with my face, you know, I kind of scowl a little bit, and I'm actually not looking or feeling mean, but I look mean and I look scary. So I began to realize that, you know, you got to soften your face a little bit. And you got to change your posture a little bit. Don't be so, just relax. And so for a few years, I was working on relaxing in the way I interacted. And I tried to remove the harshness from the tone and the intensity with which I would come at things in discussion. And so in this February, 2016, when Dory and Fraze and myself, three of the four key players in this story of redemption, we're in my office having a discussion. I thought we were having a discussion where we were making sure, and whatever the topic was, no stone was left unturned. I was just kind of asking questions, and I was actually very mindful of my face. And I'm saying to myself, face, you got to be soft. And you got to have open body language. And so I'm trying to softly just bring up questions. And next thing I know, Dory is yelling at me. Now, Dory knows. I asked her if I could share this. Now, if you know Dory, Dory's way of yelling isn't like, rah, screaming. But Dory's voice is really raised, and she's yelling at me. And Fraze, who's in the meeting, he joins in, and he starts yelling at me. And inside, I'm thinking, hey, people, that's harsh. And actually, I wasn't saying it funny. I said it there to be funny. But in the moment, I was thinking, this ain't fair. This isn't fair. You know, I get that I was harsh, but I never really yelled. Most of the time, my voice was, they're yelling at me, and they told me I was harsh. And I was clueless why they were yelling at me, because I wasn't being harsh anymore. Well, that meeting ended awfully. Have you ever had one of those meetings? And so that very evening, that was a Thursday morning, that evening, the elders had their monthly meeting. And so we gathered there, and the elders were there, and Dory and Fraze and I were in the room, and the elder team and the staff there, we were talking about this thing. I don't remember what the thing was. And Dory kind of interrupts, and she goes, hey, I have to interrupt, and I got to tell you elders that there's an environment of fear here at the river, and we're scared to work here, and it's his fault. I don't know why you laugh at that. That was hurtful. Now, I've known Dory for years, and we've worked together for years, and you know, I counted her as a sister. You know, I never had a sister, and I said, well, she's kind of like a sister to me. And so there she is saying this to me in front of these people, and And Fraze was in the room, and I've known Fraze since he and I both had hair. I mean, it was a long time ago. Back 20-some years, Fraze and I have been friends. And he said, I agree with everything Dory just said. Yuck. Somebody say yuck. So this is the story of redemption. And I told you that in order for something to be redeemed, it has to first be broken, right? And I remember in that meeting, I said something like these two things. I said, well, I told the people in the room, I said, well, this is hurtful. Something just broke in my spirit. Something just broke. And again, I'm thinking some of you know what it is to feel like something break on the inside. I mean, this was the people I was closest with. I never wanted to start a church where we just were co-laborers doing work. I wanted to start a church where the employees weren't employees, but were family. This was what my goal was as the lead pastor of the church. This is one of the reasons I started a church. And the thing that I wanted, the exact opposite happened, and something broke. And then the second thing I said is I told the team, I said, well, it's probably good that this is getting on the table. And so I'm going to leave and let them finish, and you elders do your thing. Now, I need to tell you that when we bring new elders onto the team, there's a 3-year term that rotates over, you know, so there were two new elders coming onto the team. This was their second meeting. And the way I had encouraged them to consider being a part on the team was I said something like, hey, you know, the elders meet once a month, and every Sunday there's an elder on duty in case something crazy happens, but usually there's not much more involved than that. You know, we pray a lot, we fast a lot, we really like each other, and we just talk about the future of the river. So that's about all it is, and here they are at their second meeting. I'm hitting puberty right now, excuse me. at their second meeting, and all heck is breaking loose amongst the pastors of the church. So I left, and they continued. And that next morning on a Friday, I uninvited Rod because they were including Rod. They said, Rod agrees with us on this. Rod and I were going to get together to watch some of the UFC fights on a Friday night. And I told Rod, Rod, you really can't come to my house tonight. And I wrote a letter to the staff that said, we're done. I can't be around this environment for a bit, so I'm just going to take some time away. We'll have to do our jobs, but I really can't interact with you. Kind of too hurt to do that. And I kind of, in my own mind, viewed it like a separation in a marriage where, you know, one partner needs to step out to get some things worked on. And we did business, and it was awkward. I mean, Dory and Rod are there, and Fraser's over there. Wasn't that just awkward? It was terrible. I would send him a memo, write him a note, trying to do this, bring to, it was just awful. And so for a period of days, I literally was thinking, my days at the river are done. And it was terrible. I mean, if you don't know, if you're new to the church, I mean, the river was something the Lord began to put in me back when I was in fifth grade. And he began to solidify it in eighth grade. And you know, when I worked at church in town for a little bit, and the Lord still gave me a vision of this place called the river. And so when I started it, I was excited. This church is kind of my baby. And on this February stretch of days, I began to realize that I had to leave, and I was no longer a part of this church. So I began to grieve the loss of the Kalamazoo Promise. We have five kids. Kalamazoo Promise is kind of nice. And in my head, I'm like, well, at least Jake gets to use it at Michigan State, and the other four, well, they can collect cans and return them. And I began to think of all the job offers that had come my way over the years, many of them. Some of them, I'm actually confused why people would offer me the job. There was a few places that, you know, sent me a picture of their church over the years, and their pastors had like these formal pastor robes on, and they said, we'd love for you to consider being our church. And in my head, I'm like, have you seen me? But there were a couple job offers that actually were appealing. One was in Tennessee and one was in Colorado, both in the mountains. And I'm thinking, well, you know, I would hate to leave the river, but maybe I could get a place in the mountains with my family and I could open up the back door and I could be in the woods. Maybe that would be good. And so I knew I was done at the river in February. Did any of you have any idea this was going on in February? It's a story of redemption. Hang on. And so I'm done. I'm leaving. And then I was walking in the woods one Monday night, and I began to ask this question, Lord, what do you want? It's a good question to ask. You know, some of you are in the midst of broken relationships too. Maybe that's a good place for you to begin. Maybe you need to ask the Lord, what do you want? And the Lord will speak to you. You know, we sang that song where God didn't come in the tidal wave. He didn't come in the, you know, the big fire, forest fire. He came in the still small voice. And the still small voice of the Lord began to speak. And up until this point, before I heard, or before I asked the question, what do you want, I began to think of, you know, all these Bible stories that I knew growing up, and I began to think strongly of this story in the book of Exodus, where Moses, who was the leader of the people, was leading the people, and his brother and sister, kind of, you know, the other two leaders right there with him, Moses had a brother named, anybody know? Aaron, and his sister? Aaron and Miriam began to grumble against the leader Moses. And does anybody know this story? The Lord struck Aaron and Miriam with leprosy and rebuked them for going after the leader. And so for the stretch of time, in my quiet time, I'm like, Lord, you need to go get Fraser, and you need to go get Dory and Rod. And it was a comforting text for me because Moses couldn't confront them. Moses, it was this God who intervened. And I'm like, Lord, that's a great story. You need to strike them with leprosy. You need to get them. But I asked, Lord, what do you want? And that still small voice, the first thing he said in bringing about redemption, remember the Lord will restore the years the locusts have eaten. He goes, you need to stay. You can't leave. And the still small voice began to make it clear to me that if I were to leave the river, guess what would follow me 5 to 10 years down the road? The same crap I was living in right then and there. That's actually a good point. Are you hearing this? You know, it's easier at times to leave, but the problem you find yourself in now that you're wanting to flee from, guess what? 5 or 6 or 10 years from now, it's going to catch up to you because wherever you go, your junk goes with you. And you might be able to keep it behind you for a honeymoon period, right? Or you might be able to keep it behind you forever as long as you live superficially and shallowly and don't enter into any authentic relationship. So the Lord said, stay. And part of me was really happy and the other part of me was really scared. So the next morning at our Tuesday staff meeting, it was the first time I'd been in the building other than on a Sunday to preach. Talk about an awkward Sunday preaching. Ew. And y'all didn't know that. We gathered in the staff meeting, and I said, hey, I know I've been gone for a while, but I'm back, and the Lord told me to be here. So I'm going to be here in full force. You're going to get all of my personality, all of my quirks and foibles, all of my funny attempts at humor, or maybe not funny attempts at humor. I'm just going to be me in the staff meeting. And the other three, Dory, Rod, and Fraser, looking at me like I had three heads. I'm like, what are you talking about? You've been gone for so long, and now all of a sudden you're just in? And so what happened then, this was now by the time, you know, middle of March-ish, you know, it went from me thinking I have to leave to all three of them thinking they had to leave. Did you know this about your church? Dory, Rod, and Fraser, all of them began to think, well, where am I going to go? What's the next place? I got to get out of here. And they began to formulate in their minds maybe even a little actual step or two to pursue that next place because they could not stand being in the work environment that I had created. So in effort to be fully present, I actually, you know, went to Rod. Rod, for me, was the safest of the three. You know those personality types, like there's the lion, the beaver, the teddy bear. Remember that thing? Not the teddy bear, the golden retriever. You know, Rod's a golden retriever. Have you ever known that about him? So and I knew that. You know, and I'd known Rod for years and years, too. So I said, Rod, let's go to lunch. Do you remember this day, Rod? Of course you do. So we went to Bangkok Flavor down on Goh Road, got some good Thai food, nice and spicy. And in the midst of the discussion, I said to Rod, I took my glasses off, and I said, Rod, you know, I know I used to be harsh, and I think I'm reaping what I sowed back then, and I think I've given you all lenses to view me through, and I'm not harsh anymore, so I don't know what I need to do to make it right. And Rod said to me, that's the first time you've ever apologized. Now on the outside, I was like, On the inside, I'm like, this guy crazy. On the inside, I'm like, there's no way this is the first time I apologize. I know I've been an idiot in the past, and I've been an idiot, right? I have a pulse. I have issues. But usually when I realize I'm an idiot, I'm pretty quick to apologize. So I'm sitting there thinking, this Tucker guy, what he's getting in his pad thai? I don't know. But he went on. And as he began to speak, I heard the still small voice of the Lord in his voice. Did you hear that? See, sometimes the Lord will speak to your spirit, just you and him. Sometimes the Lord will speak to you through others. And he goes, and I know you've apologized, but what you've never done is ask us what we needed from you to make it right. Ooh. And one of the big blinders fell away. It's one thing to apologize. It's another thing to say, I'm sorry, what do you need from me to make this right? The Lord began the process of redemption because the word of the Lord is true. He will restore the years the locusts have eaten. And then soon thereafter, I had a meeting on a Thursday night with three of the elders in my office, and I'm like, I have no idea what these crazy people are talking about. Rod was helpful. I realized I need to ask them, what do I need to do to make it right? But for the most part, I feel like Moses when they're Aaron and Miriam. Well, they helped me see something else. And I actually taught on this earlier this year after the lesson came to me somewhere in April. You know, in my upbringing, my dad was a career military man, and his dad was a military man, right? And the things were precise, and everything was I mean, if you go in my office, you would think that I am an anal retentive sucker, because I am, actually. Nothing is out of place. You could ask me where any of my personal possessions are, and I could tell you exactly where to find them, what drawer, what place in the drawer, left, right, middle, under. It's everything has its place. And so growing up, my father was a kind man, but everything had to have its place. And if things weren't in their place, if things weren't tidy, guess what? You got to take care of that. And I recall vividly coming home, you know, 2 minutes after the allotted time and being grounded for a bit because 2 minutes late is late. And then couple that with the fact that back in the day, I was a four-sport athlete, and I played college basketball. You know what coaches love doing? They love pointing out what you're not doing good. Does anybody know what I'm talking about in this? So all of my examples of leadership, taught me that my role at the River as the senior and the lead pastor was to point out in rod, dory, and phrase every little thing that they were doing wrong every day I saw them. I used to do it harsh. That was stupid of me. But now that I'm kinder and softer and gentler, that's good. And so I began to point out every day, 12 years ago when this place began, all of the little things that aren't perfect in the staff. As of late, Rod, Dory, and Fraze were the recipients of this nitpicky stupidity. And it was as if another pair of scales fell from my eyes, and the Lord said, hey, buddy, yeah. So you know that story of Moses and his brother and his sister that I've been talking about? Here's what I'd like you to do with that for this story. Keep it in your repertoire because it's a good story. But for this story, I would like for you just to throw it out because it doesn't apply. That moment when the Lord revealed to me through three elders that I had been nitpicking to death these people who I loved and wanted to work with the rest of my professional career, I'd been nitpicking them to death. The Lord brought another text to mind, and it was one that Jesus was sharing in the Sermon on the Mount. The Sermon on the Mount is Matthew 5, 6, and 7. Right there in the middle of it, Jesus said, hey, you hypocrite, why do you look at the speck in your brother's eye while you have a, anybody know it? A log or a plank in your own eye. Jesus would say, first remove the log from your own eye, then you can see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. And it was an instantaneous, oh my goodness, I've been doing it all wrong. I can't believe it. There's been a log in my eye. The blinders were huge, and I've been killing the staff. All of these people, Rod, Dory, and Fraze, said this is the best church they've ever worked at. They don't ever want to leave. They love this place, and yet I was such a knucklehead that all three of them were willing to leave and run because of me. That's not a very happy feeling. And so the shame was there, the guilt was there, the embarrassment was there, but also in the midst of it, the still small voice of the Lord was there. He said, I'll bring the redemption. I'll work it out. And so that day on a Friday, I wrote a note to myself. On Tuesday, I'm going to write a letter to these three, Dory, Rod, and Fraze, and their spouses, because I owe an apology not just to them, but also to their spouses, because I've created problems in their homes. I mean, like, I'm a full-service problem maker, not just you, but you and your family. But I'll do that on Tuesday. And so I went to Lansing that evening. My son Max had a tournament over there, and we are coming home on Saturday. And, you know, what time did I tell you I was going to write these letters? Say Tuesday. Tuesday. But on Saturday, driving home, that still small voice of the Lord said, you need to go to church and write it right now. And I'm kind of like, Lord, I've been at this stupid tournament all week, and I'm tired. I just want to go home. And the Lord said, go write it now. So I came to this place, went to my office, and I wrote those letters. I sent one to Rod, Dory, Fraze, and their spouses instantly. And again, within moments, the golden retriever, Rod, replied back, hey, this is great. Thank you. This is so helpful. We're going to get through it. Thank you. Didn't hear from Dory that day. I heard from her about 24 hours later after church the next Sunday. Dory sent me a note, something to the effect that said, hey, this is helpful. This is kind of helpful. We'll see where it goes. And I heard nothing from Fraze for 9 days. 9 days. Is Fraze still over there? Where's he at? There he is. 9 days, Fraze. And then on one Tuesday, 9 days later, he actually came into the office kind of chipper. And I said, hey, Fraze, you look kind of chipper today. What's going on? He says, get in your office. We've got to talk. And he began to share a story that when he got this letter from me on a Saturday, he was a little bit bummed because on Monday, he had a meeting to pursue another job. What day was I going to write that letter? I wonder what would have happened had he had that meeting to pursue another job had I not written the letter on Saturday. But he went on to tell me, this was actually kind of encouraging. He goes, you know, you've been kind of, you know, a knucklehead a lot. That's not the encouraging part. But whenever you've seen that you've been stupid or wrong, you pretty much change it right away. It might take you a while to see it, but when you see it, you change it quickly. And I knew when I got that letter that things were changing, and now I had to stay and do the hard work of being a changed person myself. And that's why it took him 9 days. He had to consider whether he wanted to stay. And so these elders who thought they were just on for a few hours, one Thursday night a month and 1 hour Sunday morning, these people had been working about 9 million hours a week. Thank you. Thank you. I mean, the elders, I think, quite frankly, saved the River behind the scenes and you didn't even know it. Because sometimes for the Lord to bring about his redemption, he needs to bring outside help. Did you know this? And it was kind of humbling for all of us to be under their authority and leadership, but the elders were huge, and they hired some church consultants who work with people who have such junk like us. The ministry coaches, MD, these two dudes who work in this consulting firm, they came in and they evaluated us and they began to see that, you know, hey, you guys are different type of people. And the differences need to be all valued highly. And they looked at our structure, and these ministry coaches, they gave a recommendation to the staff and the elders and says, we think you need to restructure the staff. We had a senior pastor, me, overseeing, you know, two other pastors, Dory and Fraze, who oversaw Rod and the other, you know, part-time staff members. They said, we think that's a little off. We think you ought to get rid of the senior pastor model, and you need to have one leadership where your four full-time pastors are the buck-stopping people, where Rob's no longer the leader, and yet the four of them become the leader. That was a little hit to my pride. Kind of felt like a demotion. That thought lasted for about 38 seconds. Because the Lord came down and said, hey, dummy. And it wasn't a shaming dummy. It's kind of like, you know, rub your head, give you a noogie. Kind of, hey, dummy, this ain't your church, it's my church. And so sometime this summer, we switched the structure of the river. You no longer have a senior pastor. In me, you have a fourfold leadership team with Rod, Dory, Fraze, and myself. And so what we learned is, and this actually came out from something Fraze said. So for months, I kept saying, man, I was an idiot. I'm so sorry. I was a jerk. I was I would say some things about myself I can't say publicly, but I just kept acknowledging that I was an idiot. And one time at lunch, Fraze said to me, you got to stop that. You got to stop overstating. We get that you know you were an idiot, and you know that we know you were an idiot, but you got to stop always putting it before, listen to this. He goes, because when you do that, it keeps us from having to work on the junk that we brought to the table as well. And that was actually kind of refreshing, because although as the senior leader, the impact maybe of mine was the greatest, I wasn't the only idiot on staff. Somebody say amen. And so as the months went forward beyond this, the staff continued to have issues, and there were times when there were issues just and the meetings were tense and they were awkward. And two things were going on in my mind. There were times when I'm like, number one, well, how do we help bring resolution to this? And number two, I said to myself, thank you, Lord, I'm not the problem today. That felt nice. And so we kept working and issues arose and issues got dealt with and things happened and things kept going and we changed our leadership structure. All the while, the truth of Joel 2 seemed untrue. I'll restore the years the locusts have eaten. Doesn't matter if they're big locusts, old locusts, young locusts, the swarms, God's going to bring restoration. And so let me bring you to 8 days ago, Saturday night. It was the 2016 staff Christmas party. I wasn't late this time, I was actually early. And as I went in and people began to come in who are members of the staff of this church, you know what I began to feel like? Hey, I belong here. I didn't feel awkward, I didn't feel like an outsider, I felt like I was amongst family. And it actually felt good. And it actually felt relaxing. Now, this is odd for me because whenever we get like invites to Christmas parties as a family, I give my wife a hug and I send her out the door because I'm not kind of that kind of way. I like being in smaller groups, and she's gone to many Christmas parties without me. But at this Christmas party, a place I usually don't like going, at last year I felt an outsider. This time I felt like, yeah, this is awesome. And it felt good. Redemption. Now, do you guys remember? How many of you were here in January? Let me see a show of hands. In January, I stood up here for the first several weeks, the first several sermons, and I said, God has really been just impressing upon me that there is more in store for the river. Do you remember this? Nod your head loudly so I know you're with me. I kept saying there's more in store, and I even said, I don't know what it is. I have no idea what the more in store is. But I knew enough at the time to lead you in the month of February to a church-wide fast. Do y'all remember that? How many of you fasted in the month of February from something so that the Lord would reveal the more he had in store for us? So we're fasting for the more that he had in store in February, and midway through the fast, the staff crap hits the fan. Thank you for fasting, jerks. Just kidding. I mean, really, what would have happened if we hadn't have sought the Lord for what the more in store was? I wonder if there would have been that underlying tension that never would have been spoken for the rest of our days until all four of us full-time pastors would have just kind of floated away. You know, Dory said something once when we were eating breakfast. She goes, you know, the epiphanies you had, talking about the things, you know, that I'd learned about my blind spots, she goes, those things saved the church. And I think those things, those epiphanies came because you people fasted and sought the Lord. So thanks. So Christmas party's come and gone, and I feel like I belong, and the truth of Joel 2 is there. I'll restore the years the locusts have eaten. I'll tell you what, I am sure the staff will never have another disagreement again. It's been years since we've had, no, we're going to get through stuff, but we're learning how to be together as family and friends in a safer environment in a place that is grace-filled. So it's a story, it's his story of redemption, it's a perfect Christmas story, and I'm wondering if it relates to any of your stories, because we aren't the only people on planet Earth to live in relational tension. I'm looking at people right now who I don't even know who are living in the relational tension. I mean, marriages end around such things. Friendships are severed for such things. Families divide over such things. But I want to tell you, there's a God in heaven who became a God in a manger who wants to redeem that which is broken. And what he did for us and is doing for us, he wants to do for you. And so when we say Merry Christmas, we're not just saying Merry Christmas, Happy Santa Claus. We're saying Merry Christmas. God wants to do something powerful to redeem that which is broken in your life. And so as we send you out on your way, don't forget your joy boxes of your church home. Prayer team will be right over there under the sign marked prayer. I got some questions I'm going to throw. But before the questions, actually, I found this last night on Facebook, and I emailed it to Anna to see if she could get on the screen. This is what it felt like for us. I mean, just check that out. I mean, I felt like that little kid all year long. So just leave that up there for a minute. So I was talking to a pastor friend of mine yesterday, and, you know, he was in the river, and he goes, like, so things have been going good this year at the river? I'm like, no, they haven't. That's how it's felt at the river. I assume that's his older sister. She looks like she's having fun. I think the poor little boy was 2016, and I think the happy sister is 2017, because I think the more that the Lord had in store for us dealt with the relationships behind closed doors amongst your pastoral staff, and there was no way that collectively we could do more in the community by way of being a mercy machine, by being a place where more people are worshiping the King who aren't currently worshiping. We couldn't collectively have more until we found more behind the door. 2017 is going to be a good year. So as I send you out on your way, I have some questions for you to consider, you know, because all of us have relationships that get broken, right? And so here's three questions I think I have up there. You know, first of all, actually four questions. Actually, yeah, one, two, three, four. I want you to process with your kids, with your not kids, with your small group, alone. What do you think of the story that was shared of the River Pastors? I'm sure that shocks many of you. Then the second question, is there a broken relationship that you need to stay in and fight for redemption? It's easier to leave. Third one, do you need to humble yourself? Kind of a hard one. You know, we had these ministry coaches come in, and they said to the staff, you know, most of our time, they were telling us, most of our time, and this takes months, is to try to have the senior pastor realize that he's part of the problem. And they say we often leave unsuccessful because the senior pastor will not acknowledge he's part of the problem. And they affirmed me saying, hey, we walked in and you knew you were the biggest part of the problem. Humility brings about redemption. Do you need to humble yourself? And then fourthly, do you need outside help to fix that thing which is broken? We're going to leave these up on the screen for a little bit. You might need to write them down. You might need to take a picture of it because of the redemption of broken things in your life is something that is very pressing on the Lord's heart. So Merry Christmas. Remember, our Christmas service is not next Sunday. We don't have service the next two Sundays. We have service the next two Saturday nights, 7 o'clock. Have a good week. See you next week.
Thanks for listening. For more information, check us out online at theriver.info. Thanks for listening. For more information, check us out online at theriver.info.